Thanks very much, George. I'm very happy to be here, and it's also a pleasure to join your LS Soccer team. Today we have another training.
I'm very good at soccer.
No, not at all. But George is an excellent team manager. So. Okay, so I'm going to talk on honeycomb iridates and rhodates, and of course I should give a short introduction, although it's not necessary here, into cation exchange and spin-orbit MOD insulators. And then I talk mainly on experimental results, meaning tell a bit about synthesis of these materials, their crystallographic structure and problems with that, and then electronic and magnetic properties. And this work started in my group with Yogesh Singh when he was a postdoc in the group, and Soham Mani, who did his PhD on this subject. And now it's continued by a new PhD student, Friedrich Freund, and a postdoc, Anton Jesch. And I also would like to acknowledge intensive collaboration with Radu Koldea's group on various spectroscopic measurements, and then with the Wenderoth group at Göttingen University concerning scanning tunneling microscopy, and also with Steve Plundell and Michel Bennett's group on the properties of the lithium-rhodium system. So, as you know, the KITAF model can lead to a new type of quantum spin liquid due to a bonding frustration of bonds, and it attracted considerable interest because it is exactly solvable model, and the low energy excitations can be mapped to Majorana fermions, and for equal bonds in the KITAF model we get a new type of gapless topological quantum spin liquid where the Majorana fermions have an energy spectrum with Dirac cones. And it has been proposed by George and Ginyard Khalilouin that it is that the KITAF exchange may be engineered in materials, in oxide materials, with the help of a strong spin orbit interaction. And in particular, they were proposing to use iridium oxides to engineer the KITAF model. And as you know, in these materials, we have the 5D states being split in the octahedral crystal field into an L effective 1 state, T2G and EG states. And so if we would ignore spin orbit coupling, then for 5D5 electrons, we would have one level here unfilled, and if we consider some popping between neighbors, we would expect that we have one hole in a T2G band and would expect simple metallic behavior, like it is, for instance, observed in strontium, in the perovskite strontium 2, rhodium 04. But the unexpected, if you like, unexpected behavior for the perovskite with iridium is that despite correlations are even weaker in iridium compared to rhodium, this is not a metal, but it's an insulator. And to treat this insulating state, B.J. Kim has proposed that it is a new scenario, which is called the spin orbit MOD insulator, which arises as follows. So if we now take the spin orbit coupling, which splits the six-fold L effective 1 into a quartet with J effective 3/2 and a doublet with J effective 1/2, we have this upper J effective 1/2 band half filled. And now the moderate Coulomb repulsion can lead to a MOD Hubbard state, and that's therefore called the spin orbit MOD insulator. And the wave function of that J effective 1/2 is written here. It has the orbital and spin contributions, and it has one complex component. And that is important because it can induce new kind of magnetic exchange interaction if we're now considering the hopping of this d electrons with such wave function via oxygen p orbitals. And what George and Ginyard Khalilouin found out is that a particular interesting case is the one where we have edge-sharing iridium 06 octahedra, because there could be a disruptive interference between hoppings of d electrons via these two oxygen sites. And as a result, one could get a highly anisotropic magnetic exchange called the quantum compass model, where if you have, for instance, the two oxygens and the two iridiums being lying in the XY plane, then it arises that only the set component of this J effective 1/2 spin is coupled, so there is an effective icing type of coupling, but it's not a global icing direction, but the icing direction depends on the bonding geometry, as illustrated here. And in the next paper, they propose that in this honeycomb iridate material, which sodium 2 iridium O3, then this kind of interaction models the Kittive exchange, because here we would have then icing type coupling between X components, Y components, and Z components, and so on, as we are moving around the honeycomb lattice. And that's, again, shows a high degree of bond frustration, because each side has three neighbors, and it likes to align the spin always along one certain direction due to the interaction with the respective neighbor. And so originally they proposed a combination of a Heisenberg antiferromagnetic exchange between nearest neighbor and ferromagnetic Kittive exchange between nearest neighbor, and they could solve the ground state properties of this model. And interestingly, they found that the Kittive spin liquid, the quantum spin liquid, is stable against a certain amount of perturbation by additional Heisenberg exchange. And so this also holds if we consider additional magnetic interactions, or if we allow that, for instance, Kittive could be also antiferromagnetic, Heisenberg could be also ferromagnetic, or there could be also anisotropic exchange interactions giving rise to small couplings of not only here the Z components, but also X and Y components. And even one could consider also magnetic exchange beyond the next neighbors. And in any of those cases, there is a certain stability regime of this Kittive spin liquid phase. Although one has to say that in all the materials investigated so far, never the Kittive quantum spin liquid was found, but always some kind of magnetically ordered states are reported. And the ongoing discussion is to what degree the Kittive exchange is responsible for giving rise to these different magnetic states. So that is the motivation. Let me now start a bit and showing you some pictures of crystals and telling a bit how we obtained them. So for sodium iridate, this is a multi-step process in getting crystals. The initial step starts from carbonates, adding iridium and burning that in a furnace, which then gives rise to a sodium iridate, and after subsequent heat treatments and always grinding in between the heat treatments, going up to a temperature of 950 degrees Celsius, we get a rather good quality powder of this material. In order to get crystals, some self-flux growth method is used, and we use an extra iridium oxide and go to a bit higher temperature, and then we get a growth of tiny crystals, which you hardly see here on the pictures, on the polycrystalline bed. And these crystals have lateral sizes of several millimeters, but they are very thin, and they easily cleave. And another problem is that the surface of these crystals degrades in air, so one has to be very careful, and all the preparation steps for the different experiments need to be done inside an argon atmosphere in a cloth box. So the single crystal refinement yielded that this sodium iridate crystallizes in a C2M structure, which is shown here. So the structure consists of honeycomb planes with iridium oxide, and that's separated by hexagonal sodium layers. And so the single crystal refinement revealed that these planes are quite regular, so there is no side exchange in between sodium and iridium within such planes. But there is a certain degree of having stacking faults along the C-axis, so there's different ways how to stack these layers parallel to the C-axis, and every 10th layer there is a probability of having stacking faults. And that's definitely a problem. So, and we also found that in a material which has too many stacking faults, then the long-range order could be suppressed, and we just observe a spin-classy behavior at low temperatures. Also, the
how far in the interlayer distance?
I don't have this number in mind, but I think 5 angstrom or so.
5 angstrom.
I need to check in the so chemical bonding, I will come to that point in more detail when I'm discussing cleaving, which is important for the STM experiments. The chemical bonding along the C-axis here in this plane is very weak. So the refinement also revealed that there is a substantial deviation from the ideal situation where the iridium-oxygen-iridium bonding angles would be 90 degrees. In fact, here there is a variation and there is a difference to 90 degrees. And that results also in a trigonal distortion of the iridium-O6 octahedra. So now the next thing is we can replace sodium by the smaller lithium, and we get an isostructural material which is called alpha lithium 2 iridium O3. Due to the smaller lithium, it is compressed, so it has a 20% smaller volume, and it also has a 5% reduction of the C over A ratio, so the planes are a bit closer to each other. This material, we get high quality polycrystals by doing, again, this subsequent heat treatments. And as a last step, we use lithium chloride flux and go up to a temperature of 850 degrees Celsius, which is quite low. So in this case, one has to be very careful because going to too high temperatures results in partial change of the phase of this alpha phase to another polytype, which is called beta lithium iridate, which I'm going to talk about later. So it is problematic that this is low temperature phase, and getting single crystals by flux techniques turned out to be impossible. And only very recently we get some small crystals, and I will talk on that in a few minutes. So this we checked powders of lithium iridate and sodium iridate also by synchrotron X-ray diffraction, and this picture indicates the pair distribution analysis. So all these peaks are showing the relative differences between different atoms, and as you can see, the peaks for nearest iridium distances in the lithium honeycomb system are indeed shifted to smaller distances compared to the sodium system, so everything is compressed. And also this comparison here between lithium and sodium system indicates that the peaks for the lithium system are even sharper than for the sodium system, and that's because the bonding angles show less variation compared to the sodium system. So the lithium system is a bit closer to the ideal 90 degree bonding angle and a bit closer to the ideal honeycomb structure. Okay, so that was about the structural properties. Let me now talk a bit on electronic properties. First, of course, we measure bulk electrical resistivity of either pressed pellets from powder or crystals. And all these materials turn out to be well insulating. While at low temperature, there's variable range hopping behavior. Between 200 and 300 Kelvin, we can fit the data with assuming thermally activated Arrhenius behavior. And that allows to get at least a rough estimate of the charge gap of the different materials. And it turns out the sodium is the most insulating. It has a gap of order 350 millielectron volt, while it is half of that size for alpha lithium iridate. The size of the gap for sodium has also been confirmed on single crystals using optical conductivity. And also in a bit indirect way, the APRS results were some charge carriers were deposited by in situ potassium deposition, were also compatible with this value of the charge gap. We also looked, because there were initial proposals whether in this material there may be topological surface states. We looked for possible surface conductivity in the bulk experiments, and also we looked for anisotropy of the electrical resistance. So what we find is that when we are driving the current across the layers, the resistance is even three orders of magnitude higher than in plane. And also we couldn't see any indication for surface conductivity. So we checked such configurations that have shown in topological insulator candidates like samarium hexaborite some unusual surface conductivity contributions. But here it's not the case. We cannot see anything like that.
So in the in-plane resistivity, is that also a variable range hopper?
Yes. even there at low temperature. I mean, at above 200 Kelvin, we see the activated behavior, but at low temperature, it's also activated variable range hopping. So probably some defect states are dominating because the charge gap is so high. I mean, that's not unusual. Also in the perovskite iridates, even in the best samples, at low temperature, variable range hopping behavior is observed. Okay, so next I'd like to talk a bit on scanning tunneling microscopy. And first we should here consider what is the what will the cleavage of the sample do. And so taking simple charge counting, we see that in this structure, every sodium atom donates one electron. So the sodium layers donate half of their electrons to the top and bottom iridium honeycomb layers. And that means that all the atoms in the sodium layer are positively charged and relatively mobile. And therefore, you would expect that the cleavage should, chemical bonding here in this plane is very weak. So we would not expect that we cleave the iridium oxygen bondings in this honeycomb layer. Rather, we would expect that once we cleave the material, it breaks somewhere here in this regime. So in this experiment, I'm going to show the cleaving was done at UHV conditions, and the samples were at room temperature, and then the samples were immediately transferred, and the STM was operated at nitrogen temperatures. So one possibility would have been that we leave the sodium layer intact and then have two surfaces where one is sodium terminated, the other is terminated, but that seems to be very unstable because we would have a strong polarity in this case. Another possibility would have been that if we cleave, that we just half of the sodium stay on each of the two layers, but it turns out that this cleavage is incompatible with the STM data. In fact, what is observed and what is also suggested by DFT calculations is a bit more complicated situation that after cleaving, so these two surfaces are instable and one gets a relaxation, a big relaxation of the atomic positions, and one loses a lot of the sodium. So here's now the data. So that's two different surfaces which are shown here, and on both surfaces atomic resolution is obtained. And one of the surfaces has the original 1-by-1 periodicity, while the other surface has a root 3 times root 3 periodicity. And now at different tunneling currents, such pictures have been obtained, and they were compared with total energy and force DFT calculations. And the outcome of this comparison is that on both surfaces, about 2/3 of the sodium atoms are desorbed. And so what happens actually is that most of the sodium or 2/3 of sodium in the sodium layers are getting away. And also here in the iridium terminate layer, where we have always the sodium atoms being at the center of the honeycomb rings, they are moving out. And that gives rise to this reconstructed surface, which is found in the STM data. And then, of course, they were doing tunneling spectroscopy on these different surfaces. And as shown here, at low bias voltage, there is always an negligible current flowing. So there is a well-developed gap, surface gap. And these surface gaps are even bigger than the bulk gap, which is found by optical conductivity. So it's about 1 eV for the 1-by-1 surface and half an eV for the root 3 times root 3 surface. So likely due to the relaxation of the atoms, the gap on the surface is different to that on the bulk. And also, finally, they were looking for how the gap evolves at steps between either different or similar surfaces. And on any of those steps, they never found indication for surface conducting states. So there's no possibility of having quantum spin Hall effect from these.
What's the temperature on this measurement? 77 Kelvin.
At lower temperatures, it wasn't possible because this it is so much insulating that they couldn't, when they tried to do topography at low temperatures, they always the tip crashed into the sample. It's not possible to keep it at a finite distance because it's too insulating. Okay, so the last thing concerning electronic properties I want to mention is that RIGS has also been done, and they were looking on the characteristic spectra from the d-electrons. And what they found, and compared with quantum chemical calculations, indicate that this trigonal crystal field splitting is significantly smaller than spin orbit splitting, and therefore these data confirmed the J-effective 1/2 picture for these materials. But I also like to mention that there is an alternative approach to consider the electronic properties, which is called the quasi-molecular orbital scenario. And here it is considered that the electrons, the d orbits, are forming quasi-molecular orbitals, and so a certain degree of itinerancy of the d states across these Honeycomb rings is considered in this scenario. Nevertheless, of course, it's giving rise to a bulk insulating state, because each of these d states only delocalized in one of those Honeycomb rings. So overall, it's an insulating behavior, but it's a different scenario to explain the electronic structure of the material and to compare with data like RIGS or optical conductivity. But at the end, what people are saying is that concerning magnetic properties, even in that scenario, you would also have exchanges which could mimic the Kitaev exchange. So it's not concerning magnetic properties, it doesn't matter whether we treat it in this more itinerant model or in the J-effective 1/2 insulating picture. That's at least my understanding so far on this. Okay, so let's come now to the magnetic properties. First, I show you the bulk magnetic susceptibility, its temperature dependence. That's powder average of lithium iodide and sodium iodide. And the red lines are showing Curie-Weiss behavior, where we have effective 1/2 fluctuating moments, and the Weiss temperature is larger negative for sodium iodide compared to lithium iodide. And at low temperatures, we see the long-range magnetic orderings. We also look for the susceptibility anisotropy, and that's interesting because for sodium iodide, we find that chi measured along C direction is 4 times bigger than chi within AB plane. Also, the Weiss temperature is different. The Weiss temperature is highly dominated by the value within the plane. So that could mean that two contributions will be on the susceptibility anisotropy. Number one is magnetic exchange can be anisotropic. Number two, there is also possible G-factor anisotropy due to the trigonal distortion. And interestingly, for the lithium system, the anisotropy is opposite. So there, here it was that C-axis has the larger susceptibility. For the lithium system, C-axis susceptibility is a smaller one. That's powder average, and the in-plane susceptibility is much bigger. So that's susceptibility data obtained on one of these first new crystals which we have recently obtained. These crystals have a good quality in terms of sharpness of the antiferromagnetic transition, but still there's problems with twin domain formation. Here's data for the heat capacity. So the phase transitions are clearly seen. And when we calculate magnetic entropy, we recognize that the entropy at Tn is much reduced compared to R log 2, and that's due to the small fraction of the ordered moment in both materials. It is about 0.2 mu bor for the sodium system and half of that for the lithium system. For the sodium system, neutron diffraction, very nice experiments by Gankow's group has been done, which directly reveals the magnetic bed peaks and which confirms the zigzag order, which is stacked along C-axis. We prepared a large amount of powder, 10 gram, which was measured by Radu Koldea's group in inelastic neutron diffraction. and they found that the inelastic response starts at this Q vector, which is far from the antiferromagnetic nil state, which also compatible with zigzag ordering, and they found a continuous response at least down to 2 MeV at low temperatures. The recent advance I'd like to mention here is from a resonant magnetic X-ray scattering. There's a recent paper which did polarization angle dependence of magnetic crack peaks, and it was found that it is not like indicated here that the moments within the ordered state are just pointing along a direction. Rather, they are pointing halfway between crystallographic A and C directions, as indicated here. So here you see ABC crystallographic directions, and that's how the moments are oriented within the zigzag ordered state. And if we compare that with the local XYZ Kitaev coordinate system, that's approximately halfway between X and Y directions. So there is lots of theory papers concerning modeling of magnetic properties, and I mentioned only a few of them, few recent ones. So with taking only next neighbor magnetic exchange, it was noticed that in order to get the good description of the magnetic ground state as well as the magnetic temperature dependence of magnetic susceptibility, one has to add to dominating Kitaev exchange not only Heisenberg exchange but also some off-diagonal exchange, although the size of this off-diagonal exchange is about 40 times weaker than the Kitaev exchange. And recently, Natalia Perkins and others also found that if we consider further neighbor interactions, like a K1 and a K2 model, so Kitaev exchange between next and second next neighbors, then without addition of any Heisenberg or off-diagonal exchange, it's possible to get the correct ground state behavior. So the zigzag state is also realized in the K1, K2 model, where K1 is a ferromagnetic and K2 is an antiferromagnetic Kitaev exchange. Another very active field of consideration is what are the signatures of Kitaev spin liquid correlations in the fluctuating regime above TN. And there is also very interesting experimental data from magnetic X-ray diffraction. So they also looked on diffuse scattering above TN, and with an extremely high resolution. I mean, these signals are, I think, 10 to the 6 smaller than the static magnetic crack peaks. They could resolve the signatures of fluctuating zigzag domains along different directions in real space, so with different Q vectors. And by doing the polarization angle dependence of this signal, they found that these different spatial directions of the zigzag correlations are associated with different spin components of the signal. So there is a fascinating observation of the spin space, real space entanglement. And that indicates that these zigzag correlations could not be resulting just from Heisenberg exchange. I mean, if we had a honeycomb model with J1, J2, J3, we could tune the parameters for Heisenberg exchange in such a way that we would get a zigzag ground state and zigzag correlations. But in that case, we would never have this coupling between the Q, so the direction of the correlation, and the spin components. So this entanglement really shows that the Kitaev interaction is the driving force for these zigzag correlations. Okay, concerning lithium iridate, much less is known on the magnetic structure, which is mainly due to the absence of large single crystals. So we prepared a 10-gram powder again, and Radu Kolder was able to observe a tiny magnetic crack reflection. You see how small that is compared to the structural lattice peaks, which appears at low temperatures. And interestingly, there's a very small absolute Q. So here it is not a zigzag ordering, but rather it must be a large supercell incommensurate spiral type of ordering, which is realized in this material. So the two materials despite the fact that Tn is so similar, showed very different magnetic properties, very different magnetic ground states. So it's obvious that it's interesting to do a doping between the two materials. These are our results, which first show that for initial substitution of sodium by lithium, we get a reduction of Tn from 16 Kelvin down to 6 Kelvin, and we also get a reduction of the absolute of the rise temperature. But then if that once we further increase the doping level, we found that Tn and rise temperature stay constant. Then if we carefully inspected those crystals, we found that they are chemically phase separated. So we see the different phases in the electron microscopy image, and we also see them in, by XRD. And it indicates that crystals beyond this border of 0.25 always have a fraction close to 0.25 and another fraction close to pure lithium iridate. So there seems to be no homogeneous mixing beyond 0.25. And why does that happen? The DFT calculations indicate that initially the sodium positions within the center of each iridium honeycomb ring are replaced by the smaller lithium, while the hexagonal sodium layers are staying intact. And so at x equals 0.25, we are then at a point where all sodium within the honeycomb layer is replaced by the smaller lithium, but all the hexagonal layers of sodium are still staying intact. And that seems to be a new ordered material, sodium 3, lithium iridium 206, which has a Tn of about 6 Kelvin. And certainly it would be interesting to also study in detail the magnetic ground state of this material. So there's unfortunately no homogeneous mixing in this region. And we do not have much information on what happens if we start from pure lithium iridate and substitute a few percent of sodium. So we do not know what happens there. Another thing we investigated was substituting iridium by non-magnetic titanium, which is well possible because they have similar atomic sizes and they nicely show a statistical mixture. And we got for both materials, for the sodium as well as for lithium iridate, that already a very small percentage of substitution, only 1 or 2%, induces a spin class behavior, which means that these materials are highly frustrated. And if you just add a 1% non-magnetic doping, you already get a spin class. And so we were following the freezing temperatures of spin class behavior as well as the Weiss temperatures as a function of non-magnetic substitution. And initially, we found a linear depression of the freezing temperature. But then for the lithium system, we also found that there is a tail and that spin class behavior remains for rather high concentrations. Even more than 50% of magnetic sites we can replace by something non-magnetic. And we still get a freezing of moments. And even more remarkable, we still see this antiferromagnetic Weiss temperature unchanged for the lithium system of minus 30 Kelvin. So indicated here by the dotted line is the site percolation threshold for the two-dimensional honeycomb lattice. And since magnetic freezing, magnetic exchange clearly is present beyond that threshold, this may indicate that at least for lithium iridate, the second, or the more general, the magnetic exchange beyond nearest neighbors must be important. If there were only nearest neighbor exchange, we could not explain that still we have a coupling of moments and still a spin class freezing. So that gives clear evidence that for at least for lithium iridate, situation is more complicated. We cannot only just take nearest neighbor magnetic exchange. We also need to consider exchange beyond nearest neighbors, unfortunately, which of course then gives many, many additional parameters for the modeling. Okay, so then already mentioned, there is not only this planar honeycomb structure for lithium iridate, but if we go to slightly higher temperatures than 850 degrees Celsius, we get a mixture with other phases, and that's indicated here. So these other phases arise if we are tilting out of these two-dimensional planes the honeycomb structure. And this example for so-called gamma lithium iridate was discovered by James Analytis group 1 or 2 years back. It's called the stripy honeycomb structure. And same time also Takagi group observed a so-called hyper honeycomb structure where we have these rotations in every layer along the C direction. So all these different structures share a similar threefold coordination of iridium atoms, and they also have, iridium is always an edge-shared iridium or six octahedral configuration. So in all these three-dimensional structures, there is also the possibility to realize the Kitaev exchange interaction. And therefore, it's now an interesting new direction that you can have Kitaev exchange not only in a two-dimensional lattice, but also in three-dimensional lattices. We were working a bit on this beta lithium iridate and got small crystals. The bulk properties are shown here. So that's magnetic susceptibility, which shows an almost ferromagnetic Weiss temperature, and which shows long-range magnetic ordering at 38 Kelvin. So at first point, disappointing that we are even in a more stable magnetically ordered state. So we would like to come closer to the Kitaev spin liquid, but it's not clear whether this material is really closer to the Kitaev spin liquid. At least ordering temperature is higher. What else can we say? We have also measured the field dependence of magnetization, and there is a certain degree of polarization, a partial polarization. You see a value is still very small, 0.1 we bore, which we reach at a small field of only 3 Tesla. Again, we prepared about 10 gram powder for neutron scattering of this material, and the magnetic peaks have been observed. It's a small incommensurate wave vector, Q vector is written here. And then using these small crystals, Radu Koldea also did the magnetic X-ray, resonance magnetic X-ray scattering to fully determine the ordered structure, which is very complicated. It's shown here. And it consists of non-coplanar counter-rotating on every nearest neighbor bond along this direction magnetic moments, which are forming an incommensurate spiral type of ordering. The ordered moments also quite big, is half a mu bore. So also that indicates that we are further away from the Kitaev spin liquid compared to the alpha lithium iridate. And the nice thing is in this illustration done by Radu that here we can directly visualize the effect of the Kitaev coupling. So if we consider, for instance, these blue bonds, which are the X Kitaev bonds, then we notice that spins on these blue bonds always have a parallel component along this X direction. Here, here, or here. Or respectively, if we consider spins on these green bonds, we also notice that along this Y direction, there is always a parallel component. And that directly is the effect of this ferromagnetic Kitaev coupling, leading to this complicated magnetic structure. Finally, I like to mention we can also get a 4D relative, which is isostructural. So there is a two-dimensional honeycomb lithium 2 rhodium OSB material. Since the preferred rhodium valence is 3+, in order to get the 4+ state, which is needed here, we need to do the synthesis in an oxygen flow furnace, but that results in polycrystals with the desired honeycomb C2M structure. However, the quality of these crystals yet is not very good, so there is a more stacking faults, about 30%, or there's more stacking faults, which in the powder refinement we simulate by a lot of side exchange between rhodium and iridium. So you see that compared to the ideal powder spectra, the present powder material has rather poor quality. But nevertheless, we see the overall electronic and magnetic behaviors. So again, it's insulating, but the charge gap from resistivity fitting around room temperature, Arrhenius behavior, gives a value which is again only half the value of the lithium 2 iridium O3. So it's only 1/4 of sodium iridate. And a magnetic susceptibility indicates it's also a mod insulator. We have Curie-Weiss-like behavior, and there's effective 1/2 fluctuating moments. At low temperatures, there is no long-range order, but just some spin classic freezing observed at temperature of about 6 Kelvin. Okay, so Now I like to conclude. So I discussed at the beginning that to realize K-type exchange, we need this spin real space entanglement. And now there's direct evidence for this entanglement by some very fascinating magnetic resonance scattering experiment on the sodium iridate. So in general, we need materials with large spin orbit coupling, and the spin orbit mod insulating iridates are these candidate materials. The sodium 2 iridium 03 displays a zigzag order, which we from this new experiment know it's stabilized by the K-type interaction. The lithium 2 iridium 03 crystallizes in different polytypes. The bonding angles are closer to 90 degrees, but everything is more compressed. And our depletion study indicates that here, certainly the further neighbor exchange is even more important than in the sodium system. There is ongoing study on the exact magnetic structure of alpha lithium 2 iridium 03, which is now possible by having first single crystals. And yeah, that's all what I wanted to say. So thanks very much for your attention.
Thanks, Philippe, for a comprehensive overview of these 2-1-3 compounds. Questions?
So can you make this argument a bit more quantitative, where you say that second nearest neighbor exchange might be more vital to describing lithium iridate? So when you had this slide, you said, oh, you know, this tells us that there must be a coupling beyond nearest neighbor. But can you even say, do you have even an idea of how to make this statement more quantitative? Could you go through this argument again for a second?
Okay. I think it would be interesting now to do a modeling with further neighbor interactions and to see what kind of parameters are required to achieve that the device temperature is almost insensitive to this magnetic depletion. Because that's very that's totally opposite to the sodium iridate. Again, that indicates that the two materials are really very different. So I don't know what kind of parameters you have to take that this is really so independent. It seems very striking. So I would hope that that there is some ideas how to model that.
In the lithium for sodium substituted compound, do you know the effect on the magnetic structure of lithium substitution? Does it?
No. So you mean whether this here is still in zigzag structure or, for the original depletion? I would think so, but it is not yet confirmed. So far, we just have bulk experiments, no details on the magnetic structure. But from this continuation, it of course is suggestive that we would still have zigzag ordering here, while it's totally different at that side, as we know.
You seem to be saying that concerning the two theoretical scenarios, the molecular orbital or the more standard one, one cannot really distinguish. But I mean, physically, they are very different. And
okay, that's a complicated issue. Probably George could better comment then later. So my simple-minded experimentalist understanding is that you can model the band structure in both scenarios and compare this with the de-excitation seen in Rick's data, for instance, and consistently describe experiments as well as the ab initio band structure starting from both pictures, which at first sight seems a bit strange. How can I have a localized model, itinerant model, and find same kind of behavior? But that indicates probably the truth is somewhere in between. And yeah.
So you're saying all available experiments are consistent with both?
It seems like that.
But well, of course, usually, as always, in truth, is somewhere in between. But so the molecular orbit scenario essentially you deal with a band insulator. So and there's no magnetism, well-defined magnetism. You would not see any paramagnetic behavior of high temperature sensitivity.
But I thought they claim they can reproduce the Kiriwais type behavior, magnetic properties.
I haven't seen any calculation on that.
But what does it mean, reproduce in band theory? What does it mean, reproduce in band theory?
Simple, you can have itinerant magnetism.
Yeah. It could be itinerant magnetism.
Cues. You get similar cues when you do the itinerant calculation.
So the ground state magnetic structure could probably be obtained within this scenario. Right. So there is no local moment.
Sure, but how do we really assure that these are local moments from our data?
Well,
we cannot say whether these are local.
Your susceptibility, you are fitting with Kiriwais.
But that must not mean local moments. For iron, you can also fit Kiriwais behavior.
Well, the moment you infer is like one Bohr momentum from Curie constant. Mm-hmm. It's an insulator.
Yeah. More obvious is the, or more direct is, of course, the description in the local moment.
Yeah, but as you
said,
the
two is somewhere in between.
And we
don't
know
what
it's between. Is still any measurement of the Magnum spectrum, or something like that? Yes, so only very preliminary data, because that's only versus absolute value of Q, since these are powder data. And it's a very broad response. And so Radu and his team also try to compare this broad response with different scenarios. So the modeling either took into account further neighbor Heisenberg interactions. So that's only one experiment we have done on pure sodium iodate. It's very hard work, because you need to prepare a lot of sample. Only preparing this sample took several months. It's a very hard job. And then a lot of measurement time and so on. So we cannot do this for all the different substitutions.
How much are these single crystals of alpha phase? Are they,
I think the biggest now is about 1 to 2 milligrams. So for neutron scattering, well, you're still much too small. Yeah. We measured 10 gram powder, so that's a factor 10 to the 4. You see, at the moment I would say no chance. No chance.
Can I ask some lighting question? Try to get the big picture. Suppose you want to stratify your status now to realize the K-Tar model. What parameters or ingredients you think you can improve to achieve that goal? Do you need a stronger smooth recovery, or do you want to localize? How do you see from here?
I mean, perhaps George could better comment on that. So according to his proposal, we need this edge-shared iridium 06 octahedra in an ideal non-distorted configuration with 90-degree bonding angles. But to realize this in a given material is difficult, because if the sizes of different atoms would not fit that to this idealized structure, then we always get some distortions. So, but now that we have also this three-dimensional, different structures, three-dimensional structures, which may also mimic key-type exchange, there's probably many more lattices which are yet unexplored, which could also realize key-type interaction. And also there is ruthenate, like this alpha-ruthenium chloride material. So I would say it's not fully hopeless to find one material which is even closer to the key-type spin liquid state. But at the moment, we don't have this material, it's fair to say.
Maybe I can add to that. So in fact, I think any material with strong spin orbital coupling with three-fold rotational symmetry will necessarily have a K-tar term here. And that means even quantum spin ions, like particle material, they are K-tar material by that standard.
Okay.
So the question is, can you reach that regime to observe some phenomena?
Well, one ongoing direction is also to look for the correlations above the long-range ordering. And if the size of Kitaifex change is a few hundred kelvins, because it's several tens of a millielectron volt, then there is a large temperature window where we can still see the spin-liquid correlations. And then perhaps it's not so problematic that at low temperature the actual material orders, still we have a large parameter space to probe the physics of the Kitaev spin liquid.
More questions? If this is not the case, and let's thank you again.